Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, across Europe, across the world, this is David Duke. I always say, and I say this quite a bit, but it's so important to repeat and repeat and repeat, because the Jewish media completely creates a narrative that anybody who's a European person who defends European heritage, European rights, European culture, European freedom, and the preservation of our beautiful, magnificent Western Christian civilization, that they are, in fact, people who are oppressive and racist and hateful toward other peoples. When the truth is, folks, I believe, straightforwardly, that every people on this earth have the right to be free and independent, have the right to determine their own destiny, have the right to control their own government, have a right to preserve their unique human expressions of art or literature or music or architecture, whatever suits their soul and their spirit, whatever religious faith that they prefer. I believe in the right of all people to preserve that, and I demand that same right for European Americans. It's amazing to think about the fact that we have such a biased Jewish extremist-controlled media that just totally is hypocritical about everything concerning Jews and Gentiles and Jews and Europeans. I mean, the other day I saw an interesting video on CBS. Now, CBS is run by Mr. Moonves, who is, he's like the iron fist over CBS. I mean, he has both the chairman of the board. He's both chairman of the board and CEO. I mean, he's the total dictator of CBS. Now, who is Mr. Moonves? Mr. Moonves is an active Jewish supremacist. He supports Jewish organizations like the ADL. He supports Jewish organizations like the American Jewish Committee, Jewish organizations that have huge programs to prevent intermarriage of Jews with non-Jews. Now, if he was a white guy in media, which is impossible today, really, and he was promoting organizations to prevent white intermarriage with Jews, I mean, you can't even imagine the kind of reaction to that. If he was promoting a white ethnostate somewhere in the world, a white ethnostate that in the course of the last 50 years had tortured tens of thousands of people, like the Jews have Palestinians, a state founded on terrorism, mass murder, first against the British, then against the Palestinians. I mean, what would the reaction? Well, Mr. Moonbeef's great uncle is guess who, folks? Guess who? It's actually the great George Washington of Israel, Ben Gurion. He's the guy who is in charge of ethnically cleansing 600,000 Palestinian men, women, and children from their homes. And the way they did that, folks, was with absolute terror. In fact, Menachem Begin talks about the fact that, in his own writings, talks about the fact that Deir Yassin is where they came into this Arab village, which was mainly women, children, and old people. And they came in there and they cut the living fetuses from the wombs of Palestinian women. They murdered old people, young people, a great massacre. And I guess it's prophetic that this massacre was right in the shadow of what's called Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial. Isn't it kind of ironic that right across the valley in plain sight from Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial, you have the village, the non-existent really village anymore, of Deir Yassin, which was a massive atrocity, which Menachem Begin and these other radical Jews publicized this atrocity to scare, to terrorize the Arabs, to try to drive them out of their homes, to make them flee. And this is the Jewish state. This is the Jewish state that the media promotes. The media promotes not only that we back them up with every resolution in the United Nations, no matter what, even though we've actually voted for resolutions against settlements entirely, but they control us so much now that we don't even do that. But we back them up, the United Nations. We turned the other way. We looked the other way when they violated every precept of previous presidents of the United States in trying to prevent Israel from getting a nuclear bomb, that a bomb, really, that is the source of the reason why other countries want nuclear weapons. Of course. Of course. They have chemical weapons. They do massive research into biological weapons. I mean, that could even end all human life on Earth if one of these bugs these Israelis are working on escapes. This was all mentioned, in fact, by Jewish, I guess, traitors is how they look at them, who were appalled by it all. In fact, there was a major article in the London newspapers, Telegraph and others, about this biological program. They've even figured out biological weapons that target people by their DNA. So, and that shows you again the Jewish DNA issue. Jews are very closely related. Just about all Jews in the world are like fifth cousins. And by targeting certain DNA profiles, they can target viruses, pathogens that kill people, and it could be epidemics of mass murder against people. And they, according to Jews who have written about this and talked about this from Israel, major people involved, they're developing pathogens that can target people by their genetics. In other words, they could exclude Jews from these bugs, these biological weapons, and just kill everybody who's not Jewish, or kill everybody who is a specific part of the Palestinian. Palestinians and Jews do share some DNA. We all share some DNA, actually. You know, we do have within us the DNA that's in lions and tigers and leopards and and chimpanzees. We share the DNA of even lower animals. We have a lot of genes that are very simple genes that are part of the manufacture of our genome, of our being. But there are differences, and in terms of the entire genome, there's slight differences, but they're big differences in terms of expression, in terms of brain size, in terms of personality. And yes, even personality can be affected by your genetics. Science has answered that question absolutely affirmatively. There's no question about it. We know that. We can see identical twins who have this share the exact DNA, the same DNA, and they're separated from birth as infants. They're raised in entirely different homes, entirely different religions, entirely different cultures, different languages, different economic strata, different religious strata. And the amazing thing is these identical twins, separated from birth, are so damned identical. I mean, it's like, it's hard to believe they're so identical. And they do these things which almost seem mystical. Like when they bring some of these identical twins who've been separated from birth, many of them didn't even know they had an identical twin out there. But what happens is these researchers go through the adoption records. So they find these things, and then they bring these twins together. And before they even meet each other, they're very careful to do a personality profile of these people to find out what their habits are, to find out what their political persuasions are, to find out what their views are, to find out whether they're aggressive or passive, whether they're altruistic or selfish, whether they're people who are, what's the word for it, whether they want instant gratification or delayed gratification. There's lots of different personality traits like that. But in addition to the fact that they find them with these personality profiles almost identical, very, very close, often sometimes they're even separated halfway around the world from each other, they also find that they do kind of wild things. Like, for instance, of all the cigarette brands in the world, they smoke the same brand of cigarettes. They smoke the same amount of cigarettes. They find a house that has a big tree in the back, and they build a circular bench around the tree. Now, what are the odds of that? They have this habit of flushing a toilet before they use it. Yeah, I guess some people do that. I don't know. But They do that, and they find out they do the same personality traits. Of course, it's understandable when you start thinking about nature, when you start thinking about an anthill or a beehive, and you see these ants and bees create this incredible architectural work, and somehow they know how to build perfect geometric hives, geometric, for instance, honeycombs. They know specifically, they are programmed in their genes, what to feed certain numbers of bees, worker bees, what to feed the queen bee, what to feed the drones. The process is amazing. Just going to a termite mound is amazing. Just go into an anthill and you see this incredible effect of genetics on not simply traits and abilities, but actually in terms of behavior. Interesting. We know that some dog breeds are very aggressive breeds, and even though a pit bull can be very kind, and a particular pit bull may never attack an individual child or get angry and kill somebody, we know that pit bulls have a much higher chance of tearing apart a child than the other breeds of dogs. Maltese, for instance, I have a Maltese. I have a small dog because I travel a lot. And it's convenient. I can take her under the seat of the airplane. I'm a dog lover. I'm an animal lover. And it's great to have a companion out there to even sit beside you when I'm working on my books or materials. I love to climb the mountains, and my dog is fast, and she can go anywhere. And I would not have a big dog, because if I did, I couldn't travel. I couldn't do the speaking that I do around America and around the world. I couldn't be as mobile. And I'm free to take the dog with me. You take a big dog, you put them in the baggage, and they might die because of the heat. It's just not practical and too expensive and all the rest of it. I love dogs. But a Maltese, for instance, I've never heard of a case of a Maltese killing a child. They might lick a kid to death and love somebody to death, but they're not going to kill you. There is so much factors, not only in the animal kingdom, but also in human beings that are personality driven. And Dr. Kevin MacDonald, really in his seminal work, "Of People Whom Shall Dwell Apart," we'll have to get him on and talk about a lot of these things, shows that Jews have an evolutionary strategy. In other words, they have actually promoted certain traits. And because of the breeding patterns of the Jewish community, they've promoted certain traits that lend itself to Jewish racism. We even now know that tendencies toward ethnocentrism are higher in some people than other people by their genes. Yes, by their genes. We find out that parents who are very ethnocentric, or what you call racist in a more common vernacular, are much more prone to have children, even if those kids are adopted from birth, who are that way, rather than other children whose parents, biological parents, are not ethnocentric. And there's no more ethnocentric, no more tribal-oriented people on the planet than Jews. Now, Jews often tell us that their heritage is something that is really incredibly great, their genealogy, because of the great things they do, because of the way they are. They talk about their abilities in music, for instance. Some of the best violinists are Jews. They talk about IQ. There's many books out there written by Jews, of Jews, by Jews, or Gentiles trying to prove IQ by saying how smarter Jews are, because of the fact that you can talk about Jews being superior people. That's no problem, because the Jews run the media. You can't talk about a European maybe having a higher IQ than a Hottentot. That's racism. But you can talk about how Jews are the superior people of the world. And there's a lot of questions about that, too. Israel is a state, by the way, which doesn't really have a high IQ among Jews. It really has an IQ that's far lower than the average European. And if you look at some groups in America, such as Episcopalians is a good example, small subsets of whites, they have even higher IQs than Jews. And the fact is, Jewish IQ is dropping, because it seems as though the most radical Jews and the most vicious, hateful Jews and Jewish supremacists are having the most children, and these people simply are not smart. That's one reason why I never had a problem debating those radical Jews. It's harder to debate the Jews who are a little more open-minded, even though you can see in the core they use their open-mindedness, supposed open-mindedness, as a weapon to promote ultimately Jewish racism, Jewish supremacism, the Jewish supremacist state of Israel. They're very effective at lying. They're very effective at saying, well, a good perfect example is Benjamin Netanyahu, who recently said that Donald Trump, well, that's great, and we have to protect ourselves from radical Islam, right? But before Donald Trump looked like he was going to be president, after he said certain comments about banning certain groups from certain countries around the United States, Netanyahu came out, along with the entire Jewish establishment in America, came out and attacked Trump, saying that, oh, this is terrible that you're going to limit Muslim immigration or refugees. We Jews have a tradition of being so open and such an open state and being concerned about you, Mari. This is what Benjamin Netanyahu said. I mean, these guys have to know. They have to know what hypocrites and liars they are, don't they? They have to know it. But they do it because they believe that any lie to tell the truth is okay. And that's exposed by them. I don't have to say this. And Kevin McDonald doesn't have to say this. I can just simply quote them. There's a very interesting thing. And today we're going to have a talk today, especially about the second half of the show. We're going to talk about Holocaust denial. And we're not going to talk about Holocaust denial, what's called denial, which is a very negative word, by the way. Called denial about people who refute or have revisionist opinions about the Jewish Holocaust. We're going to talk about the massive media Jewish denial of the greatest, the worst, the most murderous Holocaust in the history of the world. And this, of course, was the communist Holocaust against Christians and European peoples. And it was a Holocaust, as Solzhenitsyn says so carefully and truthfully, which was run, orchestrated by these Jewish radical communists in Russia and in Eastern Europe. That's the reality of it. That's the truth of it. We're going to talk with Dr. Slattery about this in a few minutes, and we're going to continue to talk about what's really going on and how we have such a hypocritical media. I saw, again, the CBS show, and again, CBS is run by Mr. Moonbeam's great uncle, Ben Gurion, the great murderer, criminal, torturer of Palestinians, ethnic cleanser of Palestinians. And they did a little spot on Richard Spencer, and they brought on this Jew by the name of Mayo, who's a woman, Jewish woman spokesman. She looks like a caricature of a Jew. And she comes on there and she says, oh, my God, Richard Spencer believes in an ethnostate. How hateful can you get? He believes in an ethnostate. Well, hello, Miss Mayo. Hello, Anti-Defamation League B'nai B'rith, which parades itself, which portrays itself as a human rights organization, but they've never seen a Jewish atrocity against the Palestinians, whether it be in Gaza, whether it be the ethnic cleansing. They've never seen a Jewish horrible crime against Palestinians, it seems like, that they didn't like. And here she is talking about Spencer is an evil guy, hateful, because he actually believes in an ethnostate. Well, what is Israel? Israel, of course, is an ethnostate. They're dedicated to a state devoted to the Jewish people. Netanyahu goes on the air the other day and says, wow, you know, we have to have a state devoted to the Jewish people, to the Jewish interest, to the Jewish heritage, Jewish interest, Jewish safety, Jewish security, Jewish whatever. What hypocrisy, folks. And then you realize who really runs the media in this country and the political establishment, because nobody in media said a single word about this and pointed out the Jewish hypocrisy, the Jewish hypocrisy of condemning white people who want to preserve their heritage, Europeans, and at the same time promoting the Jewish ethnostate of Israel, which is based on mass murder and torture and all the rest. So today we're going to get into and we're going to discuss Holocaust denial, the Holocaust that the media doesn't talk about, the worst mass murder of human beings in all of human history. In fact, arguably, more people were murdered by these communist Jewish leaders of Bolshevism from this time of Lenin, who was very proud of his Jewish pedigree, called himself, by the way, a Jewish family. That's all in the Russian archives. I've seen it with my own eyes, where his family interviewed and besieged Stalin to help them. And in the process, they talked about how that their father, Lenin, always claimed that they were a Jewish family. By the way, Lenin also said many terribly racist, vicious things against Russians, called them stupid and so forth. And of course, harmed more Russians than anything. Like Solzhenitsyn said, the Russian Revolution is talked about in the West. And he knows because he spent time in Vermont. He spent, New Hampshire. He came to America. He was a dissident for the Soviet Union. And he says, you learn this is the Russian Revolution. He said, these weren't Russians. It wasn't a Russian Revolution. It was an invasion of Russia by people who were not Russians, who hated Russians, and who murdered millions upon millions of Russians. But for some reason, no Hollywood movies. Can you name me one movie talking about this mass genocide? We have things like the Holodomor, which was, what, between 6, 7 million and 11 million people who were starved to death and murdered and shipped off to the gulags by Jewish commissars in Ukraine. You had millions of people that went through the gulags and lost everything and lived a life of absolute torture for years if they survived at all. We had people losing their homes and their family homes for generations who lost a decent place to live, who suffered terribly in so many ways, and you had mass murder. And then in the war, we had the Bolsheviks come in there, and they ethnically cleansed more than 10 million. At the most conservative note, Germans, who were just German people, almost all of them Christian people, who were driven out. We had millions upon millions of rapes. And guess who was promoting the rapes of these German people in their propaganda? His name was Ilya Ehrenberg. He was the head of propaganda for the Soviet Union during this war. And he literally said, kill these German women, rape them, take them for your booty. And millions were raped. And allies admit the fact that this happened. And by the way, it happened by a lot of allied troops as well. That's not talked about as much. No, so we're going to talk about Holocaust denial of a different sort, and we're going to talk about another Holocaust, the biggest Holocaust. I'm not going to get into the issues of the Holocaust. I'm not going to get into all the issues of that. I'm not going to be a, quote, Holocaust denier. I'm going to show that the Jewish establishment, they're the Holocaust deniers, the true deniers. There are no museums for the tens of millions of Russian Christians killed. There are no movies celebrating. There are no diaries of little Russian girls or German girls or Polish girls or Ukrainian girls or Hungarians or Latvians or Estonians who were murdered at the hands. And don't forget, folks, when we went full bore, led by the Jewish power and media and government, the same way they led America into the First World War as a contract to get Israel. When that happened, we went in effect into war against a nation that had not committed any atrocities. There were not even the Holocaust they say the Germans did. There was no allegation of that till deep into a war, which the Germans saw their people being burned to death by the hundreds of thousands. And they saw the enormous crimes of the Bolsheviks as they moved east. They took over half of Poland, but for some reason there was no war declared on Russia, which had already killed tens of millions of people. And I hate to even say Russia, because it wasn't Russians. You know, the Russians were mobilized for the Jewish interest in the Second World War, you know, the same way we were mobilized for the Jewish interest in the Second World War. But the fact is that we went to war for people who are already proven to be horrific murderers. I think we went past the time, but I didn't hear the music. But that happens.
Yes, there's no break today, Dr. Duke.
Okay, well, that's fine. It's a technical thing from the network, which is great. Well, I think I've started enough talk here to begin a good conversation about this. Now, the other day we saw this huge thing about Trump, and they demanded that Trump talk about these alleged threats against synagogues. And nobody agrees with making threats or bomb threats, but people probably know, you probably know this, folks, that this is a very common prank that people do all over the country, not about synagogues, but about schools, institutions. I read an article a while back that there are literally hundreds upon hundreds of fake bomb threats and pranks every day across the United States of America. But we're hearing about allegedly 4 or 5 dozen threats on Jewish synagogues, and that's made into a big national story, and they made a big national story about the turning over some headstones. And nobody believes, and nobody would condone turning over the headstones of dead people, and nobody's really interested in doing that. I mean, really. And you don't know if headstones were turned over simply by screwed up kids, hopped up on drugs, or whether they were just whatever, just to do vandalism. There's no way to prove all that targeting. We do know that there's been a lot of so-called hate crimes that have been totally fake hate crimes. In fact, we've had Jews arrested for putting swastikas on synagogues. And I think all that is part of this idea that Jews are the victims of society, as well as they often say that the blacks are victims. After all, blacks are being shot down by these vicious policemen, and all white people are responsible for this because we're all racist. It's part of this narrative. So they got Trump to go ahead and talk about this and denounce anti-Semitism. And of course, today, the way they define anti-Semitism is anybody that even criticizes Israel just points out the horrific human rights crimes of Israel, and the fact that the Jewish establishment in America is purposefully trying to destroy the European American people, reduce us to a tiny minority in our own country. And they boast about that. You can go to the Perlmutter Institute out in San Francisco. This is a major Jewish think tank of Jewish activists and radicals. And they talk about the fact, and they even brag about the fact, they say that we Jews have orchestrated a climate of inclusion and open borders in America for decades now. And thankfully, we're finally reaching the point where we Jews we're going to have the power, because no Aryan society can come to power in America because white people are going to be so outnumbered, they're not even going to be able to stand up and defend their heritage or protect there are people as they become this dwindling population. So we're going to talk about the human rights crimes that are denied, that are ignored, that are hidden, that most of you have never heard about today. Dr. Slattery, I'll let you weigh in with some thoughts, and then we'll start going into some details.
Okay. Well, you had mentioned a few minutes ago Richard Spencer. And I heard Richard Spencer being interviewed by this Jewish reporter. I don't know if Richard Spencer realized he was Jewish at first. It was a telephone interview, and it didn't really come out until later. But the reporter started pressing Richard Spencer on, you know, why aren't Jews white? Don't you think we've assimilated? Don't you think I'm assimilated? And he was really pushing him on it. And the way I would have handled it is telling the reporter, no, you're not assimilated. You're obviously not assimilated. Jews in the media and the elite Jews have separated themselves from the interests of the majority of the American people, and in fact, actively undermined those interests, as you've been talking about. They haven't assimilated into the American or the white population. Instead, they've masqueraded as white Americans, while ensconcing themselves as a ruling elite that is hostile to the interests of whites and, frankly, to Americans in general. And even non-elite Jews, maybe this particular reporter doesn't see himself as being part of the ruling elite, but even non-elite Jews have avoided assimilation, not just by tending to marry and associate with other Jews, but by protecting this Jewish ruling elite by stifling any discussion of Jewish privilege and power. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been at some sort of meeting that, you know, whether it was on the wars, on Palestinians or whatever, and some Jew stands up self-identifies himself as a Jew and says that speaking as a Jew, such and such. And what they're doing by this is making sure that any critique of the Jewish role in the wars in Israel and, immigration issues or whatever, that can't happen because here's a Jew here and you can't speak ill about Jews. They make sure this happens. And as Gilad Atzmon has pointed out, the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power. So even these non-elite Jews, when they do this, when they go out there and identify themselves as Jews and make sure that no discussion of Jewish power can happen, they are partaking in Jewish power. They are operating against the interests of Americans and whites in particular. And when you're operating against a group's interest, you are not assimilating into the group.
Well, of course, and you know what, anybody who reads, any scholar, any academic, any person just reads Jewish literature and mainstream Jewish sources of leading Jews, they make it very clear that they do not call themselves white, and they don't want to be called white. The only time they ever call themselves white is like somebody like Wise, who's part Jewish, part white, and he calls himself white as a way to destroy white people and to tell people how terrible white people are. He doesn't go around the Jewish community and complain about their efforts to stop intermarriage of Jews with non-Jews. He's sometimes critical of Israel, but he doesn't really go to the nth degree and say the right. If he's really truly against racism and Jewish supremacism, then he should be demanding sanctions against Israel. He should be demanding destruction of Israel. He should be blah, blah, blah. So the only time they ever do identify as white is a means to say, okay, I'm white, and the white people are so bad, you know. But then when they put on their Jewish hat, it's entirely different. And every major Jewish book, and I've read hundreds of them, folks, in my life, I mean, maybe over 1,000 at least, mainstream Jewish books, and they see themselves as a completely separate people, not only from Europeans, and they say that they're not from Europe, so they're not Europeans. There may be some infusion of European blood in some of them, but they still identify as Jews, and they understand that they have a unique identity which is different from the rest of European mankind. In fact, the rest of all mankind. So that's a very good point, Doctor, you make, and it's really interesting to watch this hypocrisy. You know, another example of that is in this interview I saw with this Jewish woman named Mayall, who is part of the Anti-Defamation League, Anti-Extremist Research Center or something like that. And by the way, if they wanted to look for racism and Jewish extremism of any type, just why don't they start investigating the Jewish organizations? Why don't they investigate the Jewish establishment organizations that promote these insane wars for Israel, mass murder, and the torture that Israel's committing against Palestinians? Because 150,000 at least have been tortured in Israeli prisons and dungeons over the last few years. But they're not going to do that, of course. Another thing that took place in this interview that I saw on, I think it was CBS in Miami, is she then goes on there and, in fact, the reporter says, okay, so what do you want? You know, why do you think that you can suggest giving these people money for these immigrants to go back home? And Spencer says, well, he says, because I think a lot of them are not rooted in the country. They've come here for certain reasons, but they may be amenable, especially if you give them money to return to the place from which they came.
Especially, and then you look, since many of them are coming here to gain money anyway.
Of course. It seems pretty reasonable if you're going to pay people voluntarily to go back home. I mean, that doesn't seem to me like the most horrible, vicious thing. And then you compare that to this Jewish woman who's critical of Spencer. You know, they didn't pay Palestinians and give them to get out of Israel, get out of greater. No, what they did was they killed them. They terrorized them. They murdered them. They've tortured them. They've bombed them incessantly. They made life, even in the areas of the occupied territories, even in Gaza, which is supposed to be a separate entity, they control entry and exit. They make sure you can't even bring concrete into the country. They even keep medical supplies coming in properly. They try to destroy even the ability for them to have clean water and good sewage and sanitation. You have things going on in the West Bank checkpoints where you have pregnant Palestinians who are having a problem with the pregnancy, where the mother and the child's life will be lost, and they hold them up for hours at the checkpoints and don't even let them get to a hospital, which is just a few hundred yards away, while woman's in danger of losing. They make life untenable. So here they are criticizing Mr. Spencer for paying migrants to go back home if they like. And while Israel, which our country supports, our politically controlled establishment supports, our media supports, they don't pay these people, these Palestinians. They just kill them. But there's no proper criticism of it.
Right. I last night was watching an interview with a Jew, and this was on the PBS NewsHour. It was Jeff Greenblatt, the head of the Anti-Defamation League, who succeeded Abraham Foxman. And he was calling for hate crime laws, new hate crime laws, to prevent this rise of anti-Semitism. And of course, this whole rise of anti-Semitism, all of these hate crimes that they were talking about are all anonymous. Everything they talked about, at least last night on this show, it was all anonymous. Nobody's been caught for anything. You know, you're talking about called-in bomb threats, talking about swastikas appearing on walls, and you're talking about gravestones tipped over. Nobody's seen anybody do anything. So, of course, and we know that this stuff has been self-inflicted by Jews in the past. So, be that what it may, these are, even if these were not self-inflicted, none of these are violent. Now, you've got loads and loads of evidence day after day of violence against whites, you know, this, and it's on video, and you've got people who are allegedly Trump supporters who get pulled out of their cars at intersections in Chicago and beaten up and carjacked, kids in schools getting beaten up for allegedly being pro-Trump, and it's on video. And then you've got these Antifa riots or these Black Lives Matter riots, and you see all these people committing violent crimes and punching people in the face, and they're not getting arrested, and it's not a big deal, and it's not being called a hate crime. And then the nerve of Greenblatt at the end of the interview, he's calling for new hate crime laws in order to protect Jews and other marginalized communities, as if Jews are a marginalized community. Right.
Yeah, they are a very oppressed community.
Just simply scoffing at it, scoffing at, oh yeah, very powerless people. That was enough to get Rick Sanchez fired immediately by his Jewish boss. And of course,
took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly right.
Unless you watch maybe local football, like high school football in Miami, you've probably never heard of Rick Sanchez again because he's been completely exiled.
Of course, because he simply told the truth that these people are not powerless, you know. So, but yeah, it's really, not only are they not powerless, they are, even David Brooks calls them the absolute elite. And the ironic thing is, again, talking about atrocities, if you support people who commit murders, or you support people who do beheadings, and you support people who are terrorists, you're just as guilty of the offense. In fact, maybe you're more so in a way, because you're not the one that's going to be bombed, you know, or shot when they're committing these crimes. And yet we've had the Jewish establishment absolutely, without any question, support the rise of ISIS. Last night I was doing some research on the whole Jewish support behind ISIS. And here's the New York Times, which, of course, is the leading Jewish newspaper, the leading paper, in fact, maybe the world's newspaper now, probably the most read single newspaper on earth. It was taken over by Jewish racist extremists over 120 years ago. And one of the leading pundits of the paper is a radical Jew by the name of Thomas Friedman, who is also a big cheerleader for the Iraq War. But over
a cheerleader for World War III, too.
Yeah, he's trying to get a war with Russia. He's claiming that Russia is what Russia did against us is like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, like, comparing Russian hacking of the election to Pearl Harbor. Now, we nuked Japan over Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, we did. That's right. So anyway, I'm reading one of his articles from 2015, and he literally says, he clearly says, well, the fact is that 30,000 of these radical Islamics have come into Syria. He thinks that's a good thing. And he says, how many moderate people have come into Syria to fight the Assad regime? He says zero. He says basically zero. And we don't even have to even trade these, train these jihadists. So it's really great, right, that we have sent in 30,000 radical Islamic ISIS people who behead people, who kill Christians and kill moderate Muslims. And he admits that the moderate Muslims overwhelmingly support Assad, which is a secular government of Syria. So here he is in the paper promoting the support for ISIS and al-Qaeda. He's supporting it and saying this is really good so we can get rid of the Assad regime. Why do they want to get rid of the Assad regime? Not because it's terrorist, not because it's a horrible threat to our country, but because Israel sees Syria and Lebanon and Iran, obviously, as their enemy. And they want a massive civil war and what they themselves say is hundreds of thousands of lives being lost in this war. Now, this is Mr. Friedman. It's so amazing. And Mr. Friedman also made some very interesting statements, which I'm trying to compile. But he talked about during the Iraq War, he said, the truth is, if you go about a 5-block radius around the New York Times with the media and the people who run the media up there, he said, if you do this, if you would have sent those people to a desert island somewhere in the South Pacific, there wouldn't have been the Iraq War. That's an amazing admission. They even have to boast about it. And then, of course, you have David Brooks, who always talks about, quote, the Jewish takeover of America. And he says this is true. He says this Jewish woman came up to me. I knew she was Jewish. She knew I was Jewish. And between us, of course, between us Jews, at first he was kind of scared that she might be an anti-Semite. Then he realized he was a Jew, she was a Jew, and she knew he was a Jew. She said, among ourselves, we have to admit, yeah, there's a whole lot of truth to that statement that Jews have taken over America. So the hypocrisy is amazing. Now, let's take the last few minutes and talk about, again, the denial. So according to most major historians who've studied the region, who studied Russia, the rise in Russia, from the time of the earliest days of the revolution, there have been not simply millions, but tens of millions killed. Even the Jewish publication in Israel, which is their biggest Jewish news site called Ynet News, they have major Jewish writers there. A Jewish writer by the name of Sever Ploker, P-L-O-C-K-E-R, writes about perhaps in terms of individuals who are directly doing a mass murder of people and a horrible treatment of people, perhaps the greatest mass murderer of all time, who killed at least 10 million, if not 20 million people, which is more than alleged by Adolf Hitler in terms of the Jewish Holocaust, which they talk about every day of our lives. And people don't even know his name, but they talk about him. His name, of course, is Genndrich Yagoda. And in the publication, they say, well, he was a Jew and his deputies were Jews and he was, very, very evil man. And we Jews have to recognize Jews that do good and Jews that do bad. But this is in a Jewish publication for Jews in Israel. If you ask 1,000 Americans or 1,000 people in Europe who was the greatest murderer of the 20th century, In the European theater, at least, we're not counting Mao, and they would think, well, Adolf Hitler or something. They wouldn't even know the name Genndrich Yagoda. That is what you call not only denial, it's denial of the power of media they control. So they can get their sympathies to be our sympathies. They can get their objectives to be our objectives. The truth is, we should have had, in any fair and decent society, open society, we should have had dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of film talking about the abject horror, the torture, the murder, the rape, the assault that took place under the Jewish-controlled Bolshevik regime in Russia. But we don't get that. That's what you call true Holocaust denial. We've heard of the Holocaust 1,000 times. Every day there's something. Even in, they made Trump talk about the Holocaust again, right, on national media yesterday. He had to genuflect before this new God, this new Holocaust God. He's just like, if you don't worship the Holocaust in terms of the effect of the Holocaust and the meaning of the Holocaust, then you are like a heretic in our society. But they had to get him to do that. But not a word about the greatest mass murder of all time, one that was committed by the Jews. And we are moving probably toward that kind of condition in our country. Pretty amazing stuff. Gingrich Yegoda. There is real Holocaust denial going on, and it's Holocaust denial. And then finally, we had one of the historian, the Holocaust, leading Holocaust historians in the world. He came out and talked about the fact that Simon Wiesenthal, who was the great Nazi hunter, and he's the guy that more popularized the Holocaust probably across the world than any other person, and about how the horror of the Holocaust. This other Jewish Holocaust authority, he says, quote, that Simon Wiesenthal admitted to him that he was lying about the fact that the Nazis killed 5 million Christians or non-Jews, because they were doing that to try to get Christians to associate with the, to make Christians have the same enemy of the Jews that the Jews have in Hitler. So he made up the 5 million, and Bauer, this Jewish Holocaust authority, probably the most celebrated one in the world now that Wiesel's dead and Wiesenthal is dead. He gets up there and says, yeah, I told him this is a lie. And he says, well, that's okay. We need lies sometimes to accomplish certain objectives. What is the objective? Well, of course, it's the state of Israel. And that's the way all great crimes are done, right? Is you, in terms of Holocausts and ethnic cleansings and murder and human rights crime, isn't it always done to revenge or to avenge the crimes of others? I mean, in the name of going against the terrible racist Nazis, what, we burn 750,000 German people in their own homes. We promote the Soviets to come in and ethnically cleanse 12 million Germans. This is horrific. But this is one more psychological weapon they use to destroy. Every time they talk about the migrants in Europe, we've got to take them because, my God, the Holocaust. They don't talk about the Holocaust of Russians and Eastern Europeans against European people, right? That was created by the so-called Jewish migrants, not from Europe, who came in and took over our media and then orchestrated these horrific wars, do they? Right. That's the real Holocaust denial that's going on in the world, and it's one that I've tried to rectify, and I really urge you to read my book, The Secret Behind Communism, and study it, and that is to me, the most effective way to deal with this. To go into the whole Holocaust thing, I'm glad there are Holocaust revisionists out there who are trying to set the record straight historically, but folks, it's so much more powerful as a beginning foray into this entire question is to say, okay, all right, the Holocaust, but why don't we hear about a far worse Holocaust against us, that the Jewish media is oppression, and that the Jews actually committed, because the Jews of the world, the Jewish world establishment, global establishment, supported the rise of Bolshevism and supported the Bolshevik state in those years where the greatest mass murder of all time was committed. Universally, they did. The Jewish Encyclopedia boasts about the Jewish establishment all over the world supporting the rise of Bolshevism, communism, that killed more people than any other institution, government in the world. And this, most of these crimes, by the way, were committed not even in wartime, but in peacetime, as just a mass murder against the best of the inhabitants who could oppose them.
Well, there's a tendency to want to do this numbers game and the 5 million plus the 6 million added onto Hitler, and that makes him the worst person of all times. But with Gingrich Yegoda, you know, it wasn't him by himself. And one thing that's really important is you didn't have one single Jewish dictator in the Soviet Union who you can put all the blame on. What you have is this whole Jewish ruling class, and below them a nomenclature. The responsibility is spread out very broadly. So you have the various Jews who were like Zinoviev and who are
in Kamenev, Sverdlov.
It's very fucked.
Well, that's it, folks. That's a swan song. Thanks for being with me today, and thank you for to defend our people and our heritage, and understand it's not just Jews who've been victims. The truth is we've been far more victimized by Jewish power and Jewish wars and Jewish insanity and Jewish defilement of our culture, for instance, in Hollywood, and destruction of human lives and health and families and all the rest. We've been far more victimized by them than they have by us. Victimization of no people is right and justified. But come on, folks, let's tell the truth and let's have an honest repetition of what's really going on in the world today. Love y'all. Be back again tomorrow with Eric Stryker. Until then, just keep thinking free.